Everyone, my name is Paula Reet, Mayor of Kingborough. It's my pleasure to welcome everyone to tonight's meeting on Monday the 7th of April 2025, and a particularly warm welcome to those members who are in the public gallery this evening. The time being 5:30pm, I now officially declare the meeting open. I wish to advise that council meetings are recorded and made publicly available on our website. Council meetings are also live streamed on YouTube, and in accordance with Council's policy, I will ask the CEO to confirm that the audio recording has started.
Yes.
Thank you. I wish to acknowledge the traditional custodians of this land, pay my respects to elders past and present, and acknowledge today's Tasmanian Aboriginal community. Our attendees this evening are myself, Councillor Reet, the Deputy Mayor, Councillor Gladewright, Councillor Bain, Councillor Cordover, Councillor Dean, Councillor Fox, Councillor Midgley and Councillor Street. Councillor Richardson hasn't arrived yet. I'm going to assume he's on his way and delayed in traffic, perhaps. We also have the CEO, Mr Stewart, Acting Director of Engineering Services, Mr Smee, Acting Director of Governance, Recreation and Property Services, Dr Stevenson, Director of Environment, Development and Community Services, Ms Shakuti, Manager of Development Services, Ms Tyler Moore, Coordinator of Environmental Planning, Ms Nikki Den-Exter, Team Leader Statutory Planning, Ms Grace Paisley, Manager of Environmental Services, Ms Quinn, a Communications Officer, Mr Heather, and we have apologies this evening from Councillor Antoli, who is on a leave of absence. Takes us to page one, confirmation of minutes. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder that the minutes of the open session of Council Meeting Number 5, held on the 17th of March 2025, be confirmed as a true record. I've got a mover in Councillor Fox and a seconder in Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Workshops held since the last Council meeting. We had a workshop on the 24th of March, which was an operational update. Takes us to page 2, declarations of interest. Does any Councillor have a declaration of interest? Councillor Dean.
Just declaring that I've met with the applicant on agenda item 13.1 to discuss Pinnacle Village, but I'll be staying in the room.
Sorry, I can't hear you at all.
Just declaring that I've met with the applicant regarding Pinnacle Village, agenda item 30.1, but I'll be staying in the room.
Thank you. I suspect there are other members who are probably in a similar situation, so we don't need to all declare that. I know that I certainly had a briefing way back before it was lodged. But I think that, as we've previously established, that's perfectly okay. Any further declarations? No, moving on then. Transfer of agenda items. Is there any item on the agenda that a councillor would like to transfer from open into closed session or closed into open session? No, thank you. Welcome Councillor Richardson, who's joined the meeting at 5:33pm. Not saying that to publicly shame you for being late, but just to put it on the record that you arrived at 5:33. Thank you. Questions without notice from the public. Does any member of the public who is with us this evening, would they like to ask a question without notice? No? Thank you very much. So still on page 2, questions on notice from the public. We had two. The first was in relation to Kingborough Integrated Transport Strategy. It was asked by Mr and Mrs Chestnut, and there was a response from Mr Smee. And the second one was in relation to Blackmans Bay water quality. It was asked by Mrs Maynard with an officer's response from Ms Quinn. And if anybody in the community does wish to submit a question on notice, they can complete the relevant form on our website, or by emailing kc@kingborough.tas.gov.au. Takes us to page 4. Questions without notice from councillors. Does any councillor wish to ask a question without notice? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. My questions are about antibiotic use in marine environments. According to media reports, which were published in the ABC Hobart and the Tasmanian Inquirer on the 15th and 17th of February 2025, and again in the Saturday paper in the first week of March, on or around 13th of February this year, Huon Aquaculture told some media outlets that it had started feeding antibiotic-treated pellets to salmon at its south of Zoodpool Rock Lease 141, located in the Dondrocasto Channel near Bruny Island. Media was told that the salmon farms were treating fish with broad-spectrum oxytetracycline antibiotic. My questions are, Firstly, does Kingborough Council have access to water quality or antibiotic residue data readings for marine environments adjacent to our municipality in waters that directly impact Kingborough residents? And are we monitoring those data readings?
Ms Quinn, I think, can assist us with that.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Yes, hopefully I can. So, yeah, the first question around water quality data is that Council, the only water quality data that Council actually collects ourselves is the weekly beach watch data, which you'd all be probably fairly familiar with. So we collect that as part of a Department of Health recommendation and guideline, and we do publish that data on that. Well, the DONESTI program publish that data for us. In regards to antibiotic use, that's regulated by the EPA, the Environmental Protection Authority, and also the Natural Resources and Environment Department, NRE, by the state government, and they publish that data. So it's collected for a whole range of reasons. Either they ask the companies to do it or they do it themselves, and it's publicly available on the EPA website.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. My second question is, in what ways are we regularly communicating with local residents regarding this matter? Because according to The Guardian, in late 2022, it was revealed that Flathead Court off Conyngham Beach, 2 kilometres from Tassal's Shepherd's Lease, contained oxytetracycline in their flesh above the reportable threshold. The Guardian then, in The Guardian News in 26th of February last year, Bob Burton's article on antibiotic use read, and this is a quote, "Testing shows blue mackerel caught near salmon pens with antibiotic residues of 960 micrograms per kilogram, making fish not fit for human consumption," end quote. My question is, does Kingborough Council have any responsibility to communicate with its residents about matters affecting waterways, even if we don't directly control the beaches or the waters off Kingborough's coastline?
Ms Quinn. Through you, Mayor. So, no, Council does not have a mandated responsibility to communicate human health issues relating to the marine environment. So, again, we do, in terms of beach watch monitoring, being water quality, so we're monitoring it for enterococci, but in terms of just general marine, and in this case relating to antibiotic residues and antibiotics found in fish, in wild fish, again, it's all managed by the EPA and NRE. And so if there was an acute risk to human health, for example, from wild fish, that the EPA were aware of, the Department of Health would put out a warning and we would circulate that warning to our community.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Through you, Mayor. So we've heard that the state government would lead that, so managed by the EPA and NRE, and then if there was an issue, Department of Health. The next aspect of my question is around how the community interest in this matter is being responded to or reacted to by Council, noting that the new CEO of Salmon Tasmania is the former Secretary of the Department of Primary Industries, Water and Environment. Is Kingborough Council taking any of its own investigations? Are we undertaking any monitoring or communications in the wake of these widely publicised media reports? Or is Council relying solely on assurances and oversight provided by the state government? If the state government were to say that everything is going fine in our waterways that surround Kingborough's coastline, are we satisfied to just take their word for it?
Ms Quinn. Through you, Mayor. So again, Council, the Environmental Protection Authority is an independent organisation who, of course, their job is to provide, to regulate through licences the aquaculture industry and then provide that information where applicable to the community. So there is a lot of information on this event on the EPA website, on the salmon mortality event that's happened over summer. And also there's information about when the sampling has been completed, what they've sampled, and in particular in relation to this event, but also just generally across all the different leases, so the community could go to those sites if they wanted. So there is quite a lot of information available to the public. But again, if Council receives requests for information, we would direct them to the one point source of truth, because I feel that's better than Council then replicating that truth when it's not our area of expertise.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova, any further questions?
That's all, thank you.
Are there any other questions without notice from councillors? No.
We then are on still on page four, questions on notice from councillors. There was a question from Councillor Antoli in relation to Van Murray Road, Margate, with an officer's response from Mr Smee. Just before open session of council adjourns, I realised that I had failed to declare a declaration of interest in relation to the item of the DA that we are considering this evening, and that is just to say that I am on the board of another aged care provider, not the one that is involved in the application before us, but I believe that I should be declaring that. Councillor Street, I understand you're about
has,
to do the
has
same.
Come to the same realisation as you, Mayor, that I also sit on the board and am company secretary of a not-for-profit aged care provider, not the developer, to be clear.
So we will both be remaining in the room for that debate. So the open session of council now adjourns at 5:41 p.m. and planning authority commences at 5:41 p.m. So we are at DA 2024-286, development application for residential aged care facility, assisted living apartments, hairdresser meeting room, cafe, offices and associated works at 67 Village Drive, 41 Alfred's Garden, Kingston, and adjoining Village Drive Road Reserve. And we have a recommendation on page 62. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in the Deputy Mayor and a seconder in Councillor Bain. Deputy Mayor.
Thank you. We are considering a 75-room aged care facility in Pinnacle Village, which includes assisted living apartments, a corporate hub, and a community hub consisting of a cafe, meeting rooms and a hairdresser. I think this is a really wonderful offering for our community. To me, it looks like it's beautifully thought out. It's a facility with incorporated gardens and various outdoor spaces as well. I think it's great for people who are at the end of their lives to be in beautiful, calming spaces, and I think this proposal will be providing that. But with any large development, there is always concerns of residents who are living in close proximity, and we can see that those concerns have been raised in the 46 representations. The majority of concerns related to traffic impacts, and I can really appreciate how this might feel like a really big change in Village Drive, given that Village Drive currently is a very sort of quiet area. But we do have to be guided by the professional assessment of the traffic impacts, and I trust that what they are telling us is right. I too note that there are lots of plans that are required that come along with this permit, things like landscaping plans, a conservation management, rehabilitation and weed management plan. There's maintenance plans and a construction management plan too. So it is clear to me that there has been a lot of thought that has gone into this permit. And I really do believe that once this facility is in operation, this will provide a really wonderful offering for our community. So I am happy to support and commend the motion.
Thank you, Deputy Mayor. Further contributions? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. It was a significant report to read, probably one of the longest ones we've had since being on council. I thank staff for making it really clear and easy to understand all the different layers, I guess, that it does. And some of the layers that really stood out to me were the different zonings, as outlined in the report. And I'm just, Mayor, I'm just going to ask a few questions, noting there's probably a lot of people in the audience tonight. I'm sure they've read the report, but just to articulate, if that's okay through you, Mayor, just to understand the different zonings that this development covers and perhaps how that then affects like a general residential zone to the urban mix zone and the height differences and things like that, please.
Ms. Paisley, thank you.
Through you, Mayor. Yeah, so this is a bit of an unusual site. It is covered by quite a few different zones, which you can see in the planning report.
You'll have to speak up a little bit. I think, unfortunately, our microphone system is being replaced in the future, and so we have to remind people. So apologies for the difficulty that you might have hearing. We will all get nice and close up to the microphones.
So this is a bit of an unusual site in that it is does have multiple different zones that apply to it, but the main portion of the site where the development is proposed is zoned urban mixed-use zone, and it is surrounded by general residential zone and inner residential zone. The urban mixed-use zone, the purpose of that zone is to provide mixed-use development, and it does include different height provisions to our standard residential zones. So the height in the urban mixed-use zone, the permitted height is 10 metres, and it allows up to a maximum of 12 metres, which this development is under.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Also, a few of the representations raised the who owns the road, and I guess then who has that accountability in regards to maintenance of the road. I think all councillors received a letter today from a resident just outlining a few more questions in regards to the traffic impact assessment. One of those outlines also included the trucks and I guess the heavy vehicle and machinery to, you know, build this if it's all approved, and the impact on that and who's responsible for any damage, I guess, and wears and repairs.
Ms. Paisley.
Through you, Mayor. Sorry, I'll
just answer. Ms. Tyler-Moore.
So the road certainly appears as a road, but it in fact is actually part of the strata development. So it's only 75 metres from the roundabout is public road, so council-managed road, and the remainder of it to the subject site is actually a private road that belongs to that all those houses that are in there. The a TIA traffic impact assessment was done on the road and the traffic that would occur. Obviously there will be an increase, but it found it to be acceptable and there's criteria within the scheme to make that assessment. With respect to the question about heavy vehicles during construction, we have a condition that requires a construction management plan during that process, and it would be in the interest of the body corporate as well to have regard to the impacts on their road, much the same as when development occurs on a neighbouring property. Under the Building Act, you would check that you haven't got any damage to your buildings when before it starts, and then you can monitor it as it goes forth. So it'd be in their interest to do that. But the construction management plan will be around the times and the management of that and removal of waste, but it's likely to comply with the usual requirements around development and building, acknowledging that this site will be under development for some time because it is a very large development, but they will have obligations that they'll need to meet, and if there are concerns, then certainly council can be contacted if they're not complying with those rules. And as far as emergency vehicles go, all access throughout the site must still be made available. They can't block or close the roads. They have to have a contingency plan if that were to occur, but we don't believe that that will happen in this instance. And then going forth, once the residents are in there, it's no different from emergency vehicles visiting any resident within that complex.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. A couple more questions around the traffic and access. It was noted by the residents in Redwood Village that I guess, you know, that we know that area was a site that they could walk around and, you know, walk their dogs and things like that, and I know that that's changing. But also with the increase of potential traffic, there was concern in regards to just their safety. So I'm wondering, are there footpaths and would there change to be like a width of footpath so that there is good pedestrian access and perhaps for cyclists and or active transport users and walking?
Ms. Paisley.
Through you, Mayor. The applicant has provided a concept landscape plan as part of the application, and that does show a portion of footpath in front of the main development. However, it does not extend for the full length of the internal access.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. So there's no way that that can be met to a safety standard of, say, the 3 metre wide footpaths or any extension to the existing footpath regarding that to ensure safety for all users?
Ms. Paisley.
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe that there would be sufficient width within the existing internal access to fit a 3 metre wide shared pathway.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. It would be great if developments in the future, and it'd be great if this one somehow could have that, because I know how important that is as well. The other question just around access, there was a comment on page 53 of the report. There was questions regarding the second access, but noting that this is not relevant to this assessment. If you could, if I could please have an explanation for everyone to understand why we can't discuss that one or look at this one tonight.
Ms. Paisley.
Yep, through you, Mayor. So the applicant has not included the second access as part of this application, so it doesn't form part of the assessment. It is noted, though, that council does currently have a separate development application under assessment that does show a connection through to that site at 41 Alfreds Gardens, but because that's not proposed as part of this application, we could not consider it in our assessment for the aged care facility.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
As we know, this this development is the mixed use in regards to there's the hairdresser and the cafe. There'll be shift workers. I worked in a nursing home in my uni days, so I'm aware of doing the shift work. And noting that, yeah, you're arriving late, leaving early and that kind of a thing. I guess I do understand, sleeping at night with any lights and noise, who doesn't love, a sleepless night not having impact? I guess in regards to the noise assessment regarding that kind of mixed use and people arriving at different times, how do we feel like we've mitigated that for the nearby residents?
Ms. Paisley.
Through you, Mayor. So the application was supported by a noise impact assessment that was prepared by a suitably qualified person, and that did assess impacts of vehicle movements and determined that it complied with the scheme and guidelines. In regards to concerns for external lighting, there is conditions that require that the external lighting be baffled to not impact on adjoining residential properties.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. Just looking through my other notes here. I might come back to some further questions from some other notes that I have. I guess, just to make a point on it, is a significant amount of tree removal, and I want to acknowledge that since I've been on council, like, it always is really saddening to see this. One has a significant nesting habitat that will be lost, and did it all we try to mitigate and I guess minimise as much tree removal on the site as we could.
Ms. Dennexter.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, there was considerable effort put into the design of the development to minimise tree removal as much as possible. The civil drawings were reviewed a number of times to reduce encroachment, to enable as many high conservation value trees and other trees as possible to be retained. So within the scope of a development like this, the proposal does do everything it can to minimise the amount of tree removal and native vegetation removal more broadly, with the bushfire removal extending onto the neighbouring property. That was also minimised to the extent that it could be, given that this is a vulnerable use that does require certain separation distances for bushfire risk.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'm aware this one isn't a requirement as part of a planning application, but did the applicant, I guess, meet with the local community and take on board any feedback and changes?
Ms. Tyler-Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we do understand that some communication was had with the neighbouring properties. We weren't part of that discussion. We weren't privy to that, and it doesn't form part of the application, so we can't comment on what was said or promised or what undertakings were given or what changes they may have made.
Thank you.
Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I'll look through my notes and see if I've got any more questions later, but I guess I just want to acknowledge I've had some family members interstate move into a development like this. I have seen the benefit of the different stages. I am aware that we don't have things like this in our municipality and probably in the greater Hobart area, that it is definitely needed. I know door knocking, you know, visiting residents, talking to older members of our community, you know, living in big homes, wanting to downsize, sort of needing more options. So it is a much needed development for our area. I know that sits out of our hat as a planning authority. I've read the report and I'm happy with the officer's comments, but I also acknowledge that change is always difficult. It has been a space where we haven't had anything for a number of years, and that always makes it, you know, it makes it difficult to happen. But I see a lot of positive, and as a planning authority, I look at this and I agree with the officer's comments.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Any further discussion? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Just to start with a question, and it relates to looking at page 58, but there's been community concern raised in the representations regarding environmental concerns, and page 58 discusses the, for example, that a one-hour survey was accepted as sufficient for surveying all habitat potentially impacted by the development with respect to the Kaiastola skipper. And we've heard a bit about the attempts made at tree retention so far. My main question is going to be about wildlife impacts. However, please can we start with a question around, on page 58 it says, quote, "It is acknowledged that in circumstances there may be comments made in these reports that council officers do not agree with. However, these are not always required to be updated depending on the extent of the discrepancy," and that's with respect to the reports made by suitably qualified professionals around environmental impacts. I just wanted to unpack a bit what those discrepancies might have been and what's the impact of on this development of that?
Is Dan Exter.
Through you, Mayor. I'll start in relation to the natural values assessment and arborist reports, but Ms Paisley may wish to, or Ms Tullamore may wish to add to that. In terms of the natural values assessments, proposals can be iterative, and sometimes the detail in there may not either match the very final review of documentation, or there may be statements that aren't necessarily supported. So in this particular instance, I don't know the exact page reference where it's discussed, but certainly there were some statements made in the natural values report about exemptions in relation to trees on boundaries, and there was an assumption that if a tree is on a boundary, it doesn't require planning approval. That's actually not correct. A tree is exempt from requiring planning approval to be removed if it's the purpose of the removal is for the construction or maintenance of the boundary fence. In this instance, the tree removal related to the development, so it was assessed in accordance with the planning scheme. We didn't require them to revise that statement. It's, you know, we also have to accept that they're expressing their opinions, and we may have differences of opinion. So that's one example. The other in this particular report related to the actual extent of impact and numbers, and that's also noted in the report where there were some discrepancies when we were doing our final assessment where the numbers didn't quite add up in terms of the amount of vegetation present and the amount that was being impacted and the amount that was being retained. And we actually got clarification from the consultants and got that revised, but don't need a full revised assessment just for that purpose. So, yeah, I hope that gives you some clarification with that particular aspect. I don't know if you want anything
thank
on
you.
Other.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. The main thrust of my question is going to be around, I guess, in my experience with conversations with the community, there's often a desire to test the veracity of the reports that are received, in the sense that there's kind of a general belief among some people that I've talked to that how do we actually know that these reports, when they are prepared, that they spend enough time on site to actually test the veracity of the assumptions that they're making? And that's why I flagged at the bottom of page 58 where it says, you know, a one-hour survey in this case was accepted as being sufficient to say, well, you know, we didn't detect the Kaiastola skipper during that 1 hour, and therefore it's not there. But, you know, it does go on to say that that's why we look at threatened species. They're assessed even when we look at the habitat rather than finding the individual creatures. But I guess what does council do, any independent verification? Or because obviously a proponent hires an environmental advisor to get a report done, and do we actually go in and test the veracity of those claims that are being made by those consultants?
Ms. Tyler Moore.
Through you, Mayor, we receive a large variety of reports to support planning applications. There might be traffic reports, light impact reports, vegetation and so forth. So, yes, we do check them. We do need to obviously respect the author's report, provided they're suitably qualified and we can check their qualifications. Tasmania is of a size that often we know many of the people, you know of them, not know them personally, and what their qualifications are for that. And certainly we do push back on occasions for reports. So as an example, we've had traffic reports before that have done counting of parking, and then they only assessed it between 8 p.m. and 4 p.m, but the proposal is actually for a dinner time service, and they didn't do it after 4 p.m. and they did it once and it was the school holidays. So we don't accept that, and we go back to them and we say, no, your methodology, we're not satisfied that that's met the requirement. So we do test and ask certain things on reports to a certain extent. If it's there's statements in there that are not entirely correct, as Mr. Nexter pointed out, but isn't going to really change the overall assessment, we know what the correct is, we will write it in our report. But to go back and forth with some of the consultants, which is we get criticised on from time to time, to say, well, you keep asking for multiple reports, we try and be reasonable in that, like what is actually going to change it. So if they didn't do the count correctly or they didn't get the vegetation community correct, we would go back with that. Whether they said they found the butterfly in that 1 hour or not, we know how flora-fauna assessments go, particularly fauna assessments. You don't always spot them because they're hard to spot if they happen to go past or not. So we give a bit of flexibility in it, but we certainly rely on other data that's available to us in those instances to know whether that's the right community for that particular species. So, yes, we do go back from time to time if we're not happy with methodology or if we're not happy with the qualifications of the person. And examples for that are things like landslide. Are they the right sort of engineer to be able to make the assessment or not?
Thank you.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. Specifically around the loss of fauna species, those listed in the report, long-nosed potoroo, pademelon masked, lapwing, brown goshawk, collared sparrowhawk. I realise that there's a distinction between those that are listed as threatened species by the state government and those that are not. Kingborough Council has mechanisms, as I understand, to offset the loss of biodiversity when developments are made, and my question is, are we able to offset the loss of biodiversity when it's a non-listed species, or can we only offset the loss for biodiversity when it comes to the Kaiastola skipper, which is a listed threatened species?
Mr. Nexter.
Through you, Mayor. So it's the biodiversity code that guides what we're able to offset or not offset. So it needs to be a high priority biodiversity value or a moderate priority biodiversity value. Most of those values are listed as threatened under state legislation. There are some values which might be threatened at more of a regional scale that are also captured through the biodiversity code, and there is the ability to identify priority species, but they have to go through a rigorous assessment process. And so at the moment, for example, we do assess the loss of Eucalyptus rubida, which is not a listed species under state legislation, but it's had an assessment done at the scale of Kingborough, and it's determined to be rare at the scale of Kingborough. So yes, we can, but it does have to meet strict criteria, and we do have to have done that assessment, and the particular species of concern here haven't gone through that process and wouldn't be eligible for offsets under the biodiversity code.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. I think it's another element of frustration that I personally feel, and may or may not be reflected in community concern as well. You know, one of the things that makes Kingborough so nice is that we do have native wildlife that enriches our lives and is important for biodiversity. So it's one of those areas that I bemoan and begrudge that we can't do more around that. But obviously we have to fit within the confines of the planning scheme. I wanted to talk more broadly now. We've heard, and I do appreciate Councillor Midgley taking us through a lot of the concerns that were raised in the representations around the traffic impact assessment and the noise. I wanted to talk more higher level, and this is now my contribution, Mayor, so I'll race through it. We're trying to find a balance here between a growing population and critically an ageing population. And we're trying to find a balance between what makes Kingborough a nice place to live, and particularly Kingston has beautiful backdrops, and we're very lucky to live in an area with a reasonable amount of urban canopy coverage. We have to balance that against the realities of having, my understanding is that Tasmania has the fastest ageing. I think we have an ageing population. Tasmania has the oldest and fastest ageing population in Australia, and aged care provision is obviously critical. So we're trying to balance these two necessities. And we obviously need to have sustainable and coordinated growth in Kingston, because the population isn't going backwards, it's increasing. And we also need to try and have that sustainable growth without overburdening services or creating sprawl. And so that's the delicate balance that we're trying to achieve here. And so obviously it's a very comprehensive report, and it speaks, I think, quite clearly to the areas in which it aligns with the planning scheme, but also those where it's permitted use, and those where it's discretionary. But I just wanted to talk at a more high level about this delicate balance that we're trying to strike, because we recognise, obviously, and are sympathetic to all of those 46 people that made representations, and about how it will change their lives and impact their lives, and how they feel about it. But also we're trying to, I think, be responsible in a big picture kind of way. So when it comes to urban development, this is a mixed-use development, so it's not just the facility that we're talking about, but it's also the health and wellbeing services, the community spaces. We can see in Figure 11 on page 34 that landscape plan that has been talked about, and local business offerings as well, the cafe and hairdresser. Where possible, in developments in general, we should be trying to make sure that in the more populated areas of the urban built environment in Kingborough, we should be embedding walkable urban design, reducing the need for cars, social integration between older residents and the broader community, and promoting activities that symbiotically develop our local economy. And that's not through necessarily through big business overseas box stores, but it's through small businesses and job creation from local cafes and hairdressers. So ultimately I want Kingston to grow sustainably in a way that helps it evolve into a vibrant and multifunctional urban environment, rather than a place where people need cars and it sprawls out into all of our remnant native vegetation that we see all around our hillsides, which is so nice, and I would hate to lose all that because of urban sprawl. So we want to set a good example, and in the planning scheme, it obviously sets the criteria that developers have to follow, but also we want service providers and developers to have high quality. And so I think that was something else that, you know, when I point to landscape plans and things like that, I think it's really important that that those things are incorporated, that it's not just building buildings for building's sake, but it's also thinking more holistically about a health in all policies approach and helping the community grow in a way that isn't abhorrent. It's one of the reasons why I ran for council in the first place, was to try and mitigate what I saw as sometimes inappropriate or undesirable development. All those things considered, this development does clearly meet, even where it falls short on the acceptable uses, the performance criteria do show that it meets the intent and purpose of the planning scheme. And for those reasons, after what I must say was a lot of deliberation and a very comprehensive report, I do think that on balance, this is going to be something that will provide benefit to more people than it will harm. But that doesn't take away the fact that I acknowledge and empathise and have compassion for the people who feel that this is really impacting their lives. So I am going to be supporting this tonight, but I hope that I've made my case for why I think it's actually ultimately in the best interests of Kingborough. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Councillor Street.
Thank you, Mayor. Like Councillor Cordova, I don't intend to speak line by line to the consideration of this matter against the planning scheme, because I think the report does an excellent job of that. The one thing that I do note in terms of the assessment against the scheme is that quite often around this table we will have discussions about a development being good for the community or suited to a particular area, and are reminded that those matters are not necessarily matters
with respect to the consideration of a development application against the planning scheme. Interestingly, tonight we're actually asked to assess this application against several performance criteria which do ask us to consider need and do ask us to consider the characteristics and nature of the development and its suitability for the area in which it's been placed or which it's been proposed. That's not usually the case. The report speaks to the assessment against the planning scheme, and it speaks to our response or the officer's response to the representations. I understand the angst of representers and the trepidation with which this development is viewed. This site has been vacant or essentially vacant for many years. But in making the assessment of this development application against the scheme, we are called on to assess the need for use and development of this type tonight. We're asked to consider the nature of the development and its characteristics and in some cases how that fits within the existing surrounding development. It's my view that it does fit within the existing surrounding development, and it's my view that there is a need for this use and development in the community and a need for this use and development particularly in the Kingston area and particularly in the type of development that's proposed as well, not just saying broadly that it's aged care and retirement living, but in the version of aged care and retirement living that has been proposed, which in my view is essential to an ageing population and an ageing municipality. It's very rare that we're called on to make those considerations, but we are tonight, and so that is my consideration. It is essential when we view the landscape of aged care in our community and in Tasmania more broadly and in Australia more broadly, that developments such as this are encouraged. I believe it is sensitive to the surrounding existing development. And the reality is that this is a site that was never going to remain vacant. And in assessing it against the planning scheme more broadly, I think the officer's report makes clear that it does comply with the scheme, and insofar as those need considerations and the characteristics and type of development proposed are concerned, I agree that there is a need in our community for development like this and that the development will be a positive one. I'll be supporting the application.
Thank you, Councillor Street. Is there further discussion? Councillor Midgley.
Thank you. I just have a question, as I raised before. Just reading a representation that was emailed to us that was felt a lot of the, not everything was covered. There was just a question in that, and it was in regard where the current open space is, evidently there's a broken fence and people walk through there, and this is evidently where the car parks are proposed for this development. There was a question in regards to would this fence be fixed, the current boundary fence be fixed to deter any kind of entry or exit from Redwood Village at this location. I know it's quite specific. I'm not actually even sure where it is myself, but it was a question that was raised and emailed to us today.
Through you, Mayor, I don't believe the applicant has proposed any fencing, any new fencing within that area, and it would likely be a civil issue between the landowners.
Anything further? Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Just a question. One of the conditions on the application is around reducing the 62 spaces proposed for the lands owned open space down to 27 spaces. Just wondering if we can have some information around that.
Car parking.
Car parking, sorry.
Car parking, yep. Ms. Paisley.
Yes, through you, Mayor. So the application actually proposed a surplus of car parking within that open space zoned area. Because the car parking is associated with a discretionary use in that open space zone, we had to justify that the car parking complied with the discretionary use standards of the scheme. And in order to justify that, it was our opinion that providing above the requirements of the scheme did not meet the discretionary use standard, and that's why we've conditioned that that be reduced down to only the amount of car parking that the scheme requires for those uses.
Councillor Bain.
So just to clarify, so as a result of that condition, there's less car parks but more open space. Is that the end result?
Ms. Paisley.
Through you, Mayor. Yes, that's correct.
Is there any other discussion, questions? I just wanted to just go back to the... I know we've already covered it, but I am quite keen to go back to the question of the traffic impact assessment, because there are some concerns that have been raised by a couple of representatives in relation to why there was just modelling done and not actual traffic counts. Could you just... Is that a usual process when it comes to traffic impact assessments? Could you just take us through that, please?
In response to you, Mayor, it's modelling because the development's not there yet. So they're predicting how many vehicles are associated... Well, there's requirements under the scheme about how many parking spaces are required associated with each of those uses, and that's been written and defined by the state government about what those ratios are. And then there is accepted methodology about how many movements each vehicle will create, and that does change whether it's a business or whether it's a residential. So they can do the modelling from that to predict how much traffic's coming in and out. So there was nothing to count, per se. They certainly could have done a count on the traffic up and down that road, but the assessment is really about what difference will this development make on top of what's already occurring. And so they'll also look at the data for the surrounding network, road network, the public, noting that the internal one's not public road, and any accidents that may occur in those areas as well, and that's included in that traffic impact assessment.
Thank you. And there were, amongst some of the representations that were made, there were a range of issues that had been put forward where matters are not able to be considered as part of the planning process for this application. And I'm just wondering if you could just... to assist the representatives, could you provide some more commentary around that, like what our role is as a planning authority and yours as council staff in assessing an application? Because I think that's always very difficult for non-technical people to understand.
In response to the question, Mayor, when we do the assessment as a planning authority, so the planning officers do it, and we may make the decision under delegation or it comes to the chamber and is made at the council meeting, but it's informed by the report written by the planning officers. We're bound under the Act to consider the requirements of the Land Use Planning and Approvals Act and the planning scheme. So we can only talk to the things that are in there and have a nexus to planning. So there's decisions that have gone through the tribunal, and the tribunal is where you would appeal your decision if you're not satisfied or the applicant's not satisfied with the condition, and they make decisions which we have to then follow and have regard to. So some of the items that people often mention in representations that we can't consider, whilst we understand what the intent is, are things like property valuation, and there's certainly a debate about whether your property actually does go up or down on that as well, but it's not a planning consideration. Whether there's going to be thugs and vandals that are going to be residing in the houses, we get that sometimes with units, and that they'll be doing illegal activities, it's not a planning consideration. If it's going to have perception of impacts of the types of people that are going to be there, which may be discriminatory thoughts anyway about who's going to live there, that's not a planning consideration. So there's some of the principles. I'd have to look at the representations again if there was any particular ones that haven't been covered. So whilst we understand and might be empathetic about some of the things, we just can't, because there's no provision scheme that says you must consider property valuation, or you must consider if the people are going to be vandals that live there, because it's just not in there, so we can't consider it. If excuse me, if any resident or representor wants to understand whether elements of their representation are things that are valid, we are happy to provide that advice. They can contact our planning team, and certainly if any member of the public or representor was wanting to understand whether their grounds ones we can consider, if they were thinking about appealing the decision, we can certainly provide guidance on that as well. And even though it may be against our decision, we still provide the advice to our public about what the planning appeal process is, how what's involved, and what is or isn't a valid representation, and we do that without any bias. And of course, you can also ask the tribunal as well. So it's useful to understand about what we can and can't consider. But it is really bound about what the content of the planning scheme is.
Thank you, Ms. Tyler-Moore. Are there any other further contributions, questions? Councillor Glade-Wright, did you want to sum up? No? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's moved by Councillor Glade-Wright and seconded by Councillor Bain. All those in favour? Against? The motion is carried unanimously. Planning Authority of now adjourns at 6:21 p.m. and open session of Council recommences at 6:21 p.m. Takes us to the following page 63, petitions still being actioned. There are no petitions still being actioned, and at the time the agenda was compiled, no petitions had been received. We now are on officers' reports to councils, and we're on page 334 with a recommendation on page 335. It's councillors' gifts and benefits policy, and I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Midgley, seconded Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Just updating that there is a few changes to the gifts and benefits policy. Sorry, I'm just moving to that page. I should have moved to that before because I've got to go through the 100 pages of the report. Apologies. From what I remember and my notes, there's a few slight changes to the gifts and benefits policy. It is our policy that all our councillors should read and be reminded of. I had someone shout me lunch the other day, so it was a good reminder to put in that as well. Sometimes it's beyond your control. But the question actually that I had around this is, as a councillor, if we're out and buy, say, a raffle ticket and win the prize, it's always a really kind of difficult thing, but I couldn't see that this was covered at all in a gifts and benefits policy. Just, yeah, wondering any comments to that.
Mr. Stewart, have you ever won a raffle?
I'm not sure I'm that lucky, Mayor. So through you, Mayor, so I would see that as an incidental benefit you've paid to enter the raffle in that case, and that's the luck of the draw. I don't believe that's something that needs to be declared under the gifts and benefits.
And particularly as a nominal value as well, like if you win a bottle of wine, like it's under the threshold for it.
Yes, yes. Well, it depends on the charity. Sometimes I donate it back.
Yeah.
As well. But yeah, I guess it wasn't
it's
covered.
It's always a good, wise thing to do.
It wasn't, covered in this policy, but I guess this, you know, keeps us accountable, makes sure we're not getting bribed, as some people think that we do. We definitely don't. And this gives some accountability in regards to that, and the track changes are all there, and I agree with the changes. I didn't find any spelling mistakes, but I'm not really good at that, so see if anybody else did.
Well, I didn't, and I can spot a typo from 30 miles away. Is there any further discussion on this one? Questions? Otherwise, I will put the recommendation. So it's moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 354, review of unauthorised vegetation damage signage policy, with a recommendation on page 357, and I'm once again looking for a mover and a seconder, please. Moved Councillor Fox, seconded Councillor Cordova. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. I guess this is all about council making it obvious to people in the community that they value the trees that are and vegetation in the community, and when there is malicious harm or damage, there are different forms of signage that we use to show that how we feel, and to indicate that particularly if a tree or vegetation has been damaged and there's benefit to certain members of the community, that it's obvious that that there may well be repercussions. And this particular signage has been quite controversial in the past, but council has stuck to their original policy and philosophy, and I think it's a good thing to do. I think it shows that we appreciate the trees and the vegetation, particularly in coastal areas and in areas that are prone to erosion. And also I think it's important to warn people and show that they will be called out if they do something like this, and the community doesn't take it very nice and lightly. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Any further discussion? Councillor Cordover.
Thank you, Mayor. I too support the motion. I'm pleased to second it. A couple of questions, I guess, noting that what the report says about the size of the signage and whether that makes any impact on outcomes. My question is around alternative measures in addition to signage and whether they've been considered or implemented in the past, and whether we have any evidence for their efficacy. So where illegal vegetation removal has been detected, do we implement local education campaigns whereby, for example, each resident in the neighbourhood would be contacted, you know, a door knock or a pamphlet that says that tries to explain the ecological benefits, but also the legal implications, the fines, the aesthetic importance of trees, or social media campaigns on community Facebook pages. Like, basically, my question is, it's good to have the physical sign, and I think that's important, but do we also maybe try and make an attempt to contact everybody? There's, for example, where I am in the Allens Rivulet area, there's the Allens Rivulet community group on Facebook that's very active. So do we try other avenues to enhance the education when these incidents do occur?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. That's a great question. Yes, we do, and we could do more. So we absolutely do letterbox drops to all the residents anywhere near where the issue has occurred, and we generally do that initially to try to, in our investigation, or to try to work out who did the, whether it's did the removal or poisoning a tree or what it might have been. So, yeah, our first response is always to try to investigate and find out what happened, and the signs are used as a last resort when no one has seen anything or is willing to report anything. So they are really last resort. So we do, yes, we do letterbox drop, and the other time we letterbox drop is where the removal, it's not removal, where it's often you would have seen it, pruning. So a lot of people prune coastal vegetation just at a line so that they can still maintain their view. That happens a lot, or they might just do a really minor removal, and we use letterbox dropping a lot in those situations as reminders for what people can and can't do under council's bylaw, and to always give them the reason of why. Because, I believe if we don't give them a why, then there's no reason that they'll change their behaviour. So we do. We could do more around, as you say, social media. So we do a lot of, as you know, general information around what are the values of biodiversity in Kimberley. We promote that widely through events and social media posts, but not specifically around this issue. So we'll take that on board.
Thank you.
Councillor Cordover.
Through you, Mayor, just one more question is around the use of GIS and other monitoring tools that might exist to assess tree health regularly in order to determine where or when illegal activity has occurred. At the moment, do we just rely on local neighbourhood reporting incidents of illegal vegetation clearing, or do we have a mechanism to use GIS to identify areas where these changes are occurring?
Ms. Quinn.
Through you, Mayor. At the moment, we use reports and our own offices, so I guess we're out and about in our reserves a lot. A lot of us live in Kingborough, so a combination of those on-site that on-site monitoring, but it is very passive. So the other thing we have done recently is mapped the tree canopy across the municipality, and predominantly on council land. And so there is absolutely, as you would know, technology now to be able to do that through time using LIDAR to determine change in height. So where vegetation has been removed, there'll be a change in the height, and that can be done automatically through the modelling. So we haven't gone down that track, but we've certainly talked about whether we will do that in the future.
Councillor Cordova.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor. Finally, to conclude my contribution, I think it's there's a synergy that exists between, I've, as you may know, been a long-time advocate of a street tree strategy for Kingborough, and I think, you know, it's one of those hidden benefits of having a street tree strategy and urban canopy coverage targets is you kind of start out by doing all of that mapping and information collecting, which I think we're on our way towards. But it would also have, you know, these subsidiary benefits of being able to see when there is widespread illegal activity happening. You can kind of identify it more easily. So anyway, I think when all said and done, it is a good policy, and I realise it's not quite as simple as it looks. It always sounds simple on the face of it, but when you kind of dig into these things, there's all these kind of other elements where, you know, do we want to be in effect kind of punishing the whole neighbourhood for the bad actions of one malicious actor, and all these kind of considerations that we make. But I think this particular policy does strike a good balance, so I'm pleased to support it. And thank you very much to all the staff and officers for their work on this important issue. Thanks.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. I think next, did I see Councillor Richardson's light on? Or was I imagining that? Okay, Councillor Bain.
Thank you, Mayor. Happy to support the policy. It's always disappointing to see it when this occurs. Just a couple of typo errors to update on 5.6.2 and 5.7. Just a couple of general manager references there that need updating to CEO.
Are you looking at the page 364? Or are you looking at the marked up?
5.6.2 and 5.7.
Through you, Mayor, if I can comment on that. So we did pick them up late in the piece, and whilst it's not in the track changes version, it is in the final version of the policy. Okay. So we've made those edits.
Very good.
I was going to say, because the one I'm looking at says CEO.
Okay,
I'll
be in the hard copy.
Any further discussion? Just one issue that I just wanted to raise. We have very specific wording that as shown, and the policy specifically says the wording for the signage will be as follows. I know you've all heard me say this before, but I love clear English that's easily accessible by all people in the community, and I do feel like we're using sort of words here that are a bit more complicated and not as accessible to everyone in the community, given we have different literacy standards. I also don't know why it is that we need to, on a lot of our signs, we do refer to whatever the bylaw is that we're saying to people, you can't do this because of a bylaw. I don't know whether that seems really punitive. I don't know why, you know, like you look at the Clarence Council example, and I know it's different because that's a picture of a sign where they're offering a reward and they're saying ring Crime Stoppers. But if I was to walk past the Clarence Council sign that we've got a photo of here and the sign that we're proposing to put up, I know which one is going to capture my attention. It's the one with the big picture on it and the one that clearly, in language that a lot of people could understand, I think would be able to read that and understand what the intent of it is. So I'm not going to re-wordsmith this now, and I wish I had picked this up sooner, but I just feel like we could improve the language that's used in this to for it to be more effective. I don't know whether Ms. Quinn, you'd like to comment on that.
Through you, to you, Mayor, in response to you, Mayor, I completely agree, and I noticed that when I was preparing for the meeting, and I wish that we'd said, and I wonder if we can change it. But need some guidance from somebody about that, about that it may be as follows, that so for 5.5 it could read the wording for signage
may be
as follows, because our intention of was never really to say this must be the wording and certainly not that it must look like that. So it is just about the wording, but I do completely agree with you around plain English, and the reason we put the Clarence sign is because we believe it'll be a lot more effective. I think the bylaw, using the bylaws, as you say, we do it across the municipality. I gather it's about to communicate the seriousness of the offence, that we're not just saying please don't do it, we're saying you must not do it. But maybe that's not how people read it anyway. So I'm interested in others think about that.
I guess I just feel like if people see a quote of a bylaw number, blah, 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 their eyes are just going to glaze over. And, you know, I remember seeing that on signs as long ago as when I was a kid, and I'd play at the local playground and there'd be, you know, the town clerk at Clarence had a sign up saying that it was an offence to, I don't know, play ball games in the park at the Tranmere Hall, you know, and there was his name in the bylaw, and it's like, okay, whatever. I just wonder if we can say it a different way. I don't know what everyone else's feelings on it are. I would like to propose, if the mover and seconder, so Councillor Vox and Councillor Cordova, if they would accept, well, I can't move it, but I'm sure somebody else might do it on my behalf, an amendment to say that the 5.5, that it read the wording for the signage may be as follows, which will just then give us some flexibility moving forward to perhaps change the language to make it a little bit user-friendly.
I'm happy with that.
So Councillor Midgley is moving that, and it's acceptable to Councillor Cordova and Councillor Fox.
Amendment. Yes, it's acceptable to me as seconder.
Yep, and Councillor Fox, thank you. Okay. All right, thank you very much. Any other further discussion? Okay, I'm going to put the recommendation. It's with that slight amendment. It was... Oh, sorry, Councillor Fox, did you want to sum up? Beg your pardon.
No, I think it's been a great discussion. Thank you.
Thank you. So it's moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Cordova. All those in favour?
Aye.
Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to 16.3, appendices. Does anyone have any questions on the appendices? I'll ask for a mover and a seconder for the appendices. Moved Councillor Gladewright and seconded Councillor Midgley. Opening it up for any questions on the appendices. No one wants to rule the
question. I don't have a question, but I'm trying to make a question. Oh, sorry.
Councillor Midgley.
Sorry, that was rude of me. I don't particularly have a question, but trying to make a question, because it's always really great to see the comments, the projects and things like that we've done across the municipality. It's a really great showcase, and I know the answer, but this is a question anyway. But do we promote this these projects on our social media and website and things like that, and are people generally happy for us to keep them updated that way?
We do on various projects, obviously not all of them, but I think, you know, as councillors also it would be great if some of us could promote some of this work that is done, because I can imagine that, you know, buried back at page 380-something of a council agenda is not the way that we're going to get the message out to the community about the work that is going on in maintaining all of our various pieces of infrastructure and assets right across the municipality from one end of it to the other. But certainly our comms team do a very good job of highlighting some of those as they are undertaken.
Thanks, Mayor. And yes, they do. And I'm wondering at all if any of the other committees, walk about some of these projects that might affect their area. Like, for example, the KBAC committee is going to go and cycle some of the fantastic paths and things in the bridge that has been created around Spring Farm Whitewater, just to really highlight those really excellent projects that we do as a council that sometimes get lost in all, you know, what do we do? Like, we do such a great, significant work. So I'm not sure if any of the other committees kind of get out and actually, you know, touch and feel stuff and see... the work that's been undertaken.
Well, certainly speaking on behalf of the Disability Inclusion Access Committee, I know that
many of those members do, will, you know, going about their daily lives, will come back with feedback on various facilities that we have around Kingborough, particularly the council ones in relation to, you know, curb ramps and footpaths and the ability to move around in a mobility device appropriately. So, and in the past when we've had, when we built the community hub, for example, the access committee went over there and gave it a thorough testing to test out, you know, how was the wayfinding for somebody with decreased vision? How are you able to move around there in a wheelchair, et cetera, et cetera? And then was able to provide feedback to council staff ahead of the facility being opened, and that was really worthwhile. So we certainly do encourage that, but I can't talk on behalf of other committees, but just know we have a very dedicated access committee, just as we do the bike one. Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Cordova, and then Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. My questions are for the regarding the CEO's activities. 20th of February, attended the Jack Jumpers High Performance Training Centre Steering Committee meeting. My question is really, where's that up to? But also, who's on the steering committee, and how were they selected, and what are they? What specifically are they steering? Thank you.
Project. The CEO.
Through you, Mayor. Thanks for the question. So the steering committee is made up of members of the Department of State Growth. So it's chaired by director at the Department of State Growth, DepSec, I think, in the Department of State Growth, and has members from Department of State Growth, the Jack Jumpers, and from Kingborough Council, i.e. myself. In terms of what that group does, is it overseeing the development of the High Performance Training Centre for the Jack Jumpers by way of an outdate of where that's at. So the contract has been put out for tender. So my understanding is they're in the tender period at the moment for different companies to put forward their best price in terms of the development.
Thank you. So through you, Mayor, just further to that,
Thank you.
My question then is, so, yeah, I guess I got a bit confused. All the tenders and things like that, it's the steering committee that's kind of formulating the scope of those and then putting those out, and it'll be the steering committee that will be assessing those. So that's how they're overseeing the development.
CEO.
Yeah, through you. So the steering committee is not in the detail of the detail of what goes out for tender, or certainly won't be assessing those tenders in of themselves. That's done by the role of the steering committee is much more overseeing the project in terms of timelines, any issues and risks that we need to be across around the project, and making sure that it stays on track, while the project delivery team oversee the detail of that delivery.
Councillor Cordova, your microphone would have gone off.
Thank you. Through you, Mayor, in terms of the communication with the rest of the sports precinct and all of the other stakeholders involved, is that something that the steering committee is involved in, that communications piece?
So certainly, remain across the communications. More broadly, we know that there's a lot going on within the sport precinct, and so council is independently meeting with staff from the Department of State Growth on a regular basis to make sure that we're coordinating our communication streams and that, you know, the various elements that we need to be communicating with the other user groups, with the community, other impacted parties go through a clear process to be able to go out to the community, so we make sure that the right comms are reaching the right people at the right time. It's fair to say that there's been some misunderstanding at points in the process around this project, so it's certainly one we're looking to stay across, and certainly from a steering committee perspective, at a high level. But in terms of our comms team are working closely with the project as well.
Great, thank you.
Thank you. Any further discussions? If not, I'll put the...
Excuse me?
Yeah, sorry, Councillor Fox, you didn't have your light on, so I beg your pardon. You did indicate. My apologies, Councillor Fox.
That's all right. It's okay. I just had a question of the CEO on the 13th of February, where he met with the Surf Life Saving Club, and I'm just wondering if that relates to the promise from one of our people standing for Parliament, or in terms of a club room extension, or if that's a separate issue.
CEO.
Through you, Mayor. So certainly during that conversation we talked about the club's aspirations for development. So there's a couple of locations that they have been thinking about for development. So that was a topic of conversation at that time. I wasn't aware of the commitment that would be made through one of the candidates seeking election in the federal election. But yes, that was part of the topic of conversation.
Councillor Fox.
I guess a lot of people around the table now aren't aware of the history of this situation in that it was an ambit claim when the current building was built, and this council felt that it was beyond the scope of our council to provide that another story, and for planning reasons as well. So I think we have to be very cautious in accepting any federal funding for an asset on council land, and it's our building. So I just, warning bells are ringing in my head. Thank you.
The CEO.
Yeah, through you, Mayor. Thank you for that clarification, Councillor Fox. Certainly it's a concern for me as well around a presupposition that a building can go ahead on council land, building on top of a council asset, and that can happen before we've gone through a planning process, DAs, approvals from council around leases or licences for that space as well. So that was why I was cautious in my initial response, because whilst we did talk about it, there's certainly no concrete commitment from council around that development, and certainly having a assertion around funding coming through does sort of put pressure on council, and we need to be really clear about achieving good outcomes in terms of development. Not saying that we don't support the development of Surf Life Saving to achieve their aspirations, because we absolutely do, but we need to make sure that we do it in the right way and follow good process around any development.
It's just to add to that, it's my understanding, because the only knowledge I have of that announcement is seeing it on the news the weekend before last. It's my understanding that the funding commitment is to the club itself and not to council, so the money wouldn't be coming to us. But I don't have any further details or knowledge of it. Any further discussions? If not, I'll put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Gladwright and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. Takes us to notices of motion. We have a notice of motion that has been submitted by Councillor Midgley in relation to FOGO service, and a response from Mr. Smee. So it's moved by Councillor Midgley. Do I have a seconder? Councillor Gladwright. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. I've been sitting on this idea for a while, waiting for the right time. And as we know, FOGO happened at our municipality a few years ago. We went for an opt-in service, and I supported that to kick it along the road. Ideally, I would have liked an opt-out then, but anyway, that's what we got. But it did get things moving and, I guess, get the system operating. I meet a lot of people in the community who would love to have FOGO, didn't know about it. I give them information about how to sign up for it. And so I think this opt-out service, I guess, is a way to ensure that everyone can have it. But also, as mentioned in the background, you know, this just isn't my idea. At a recent councillor workshop, the board chair of KWS, Kimberley Waste Services, recommended that we transition to that. And there's a whole heap of other information in regards to the environmental benefits of that, our net zero target of reducing waste to landfill. There's implications financially in regards to landfill levy and fees, which will increase again in 2027. More councils across Tasmania are moving to this. Let's be part of that and make that change. I was hoping that we could happen, that it could occur in the next financial year, but I was advised to add sort of as practically as possible. So I'm happy with that to move it along. And just today, actually, I saw some information from the Lord Mayor of Hobart that they, and sorry if I've missed any crunching the numbers that we've had in Kingborough, but this one just caught my eye. Basically, they've crunched the numbers and the results are in. More than 60% of what's being put into Hobart's red lid bin shouldn't be there. Food scraps, garden waste and recyclables are ending up in landfill. I guess the thing we're looking up here is food scraps and garden waste. So transitioning to this, we know there's loads of benefits. I look forward to the report. I guess in the report, I'm hoping as well, and that's why as well the motion is put to council versus staff giving us a report. So I really hope that if you have any questions or concerns about this model, please speak up now so staff can address that in the report. I was advised by a former staff member, you know, to bring it this way. But I guess one of the things that I'd love us to consider or have, you know, to be named up in the report is in regards to sort of cafes and perhaps transition for cafes for FOGO, like even council, our building and other council-owned kind of like, places, the depot and whatever. Also sporting clubs. I think, you know, you go to any sporting club, I'm not going to name anything. I had a discussion on the weekend when I helped in the canteen, like, you know, what that looks like, I guess, and to address that sort of area. And also I think there was around land size sort of questions as well, and also unit developments. So I understand that unit developments, they have to pay for their own bin services sometimes. So if those sort of things could be outlined in this report, that would be really great for me to know. But I look forward to hearing from anyone else. Speak up now so we can address it in the report.
Okay, just for clarification, Councillor Midgley, those issues that you've just raised, because your motion is slightly different. Your motion is asking for a report on an opt-out service for Kingborough, which we currently only have for residential properties, but you're now seeking to broaden the report to mention all those other areas. Can I just be clear what we're asking for so that we're not ending up with a report that... Okay. I'm not trying to be smart.
Oh,
I'm
that's
actually...
okay. No, that's a good point.
Because they're kind of like two different things that you're talking about. You're talking about expanding the FOGO services that we currently offer for residential to a whole lot of other... to unit developments, to sporting clubs, to cafes and restaurants... But what I'm reading here is you want a report that is saying that we should have opt-out rather than opt-in. Are these two different things? Should you be approaching this as two different things?
Perhaps I should be. I just thought I'd raise them tonight and see where they landed. But, yes, I'm happy for what I've put in the motion. But I guess I'm also thinking about the other options for FOGO to expand it. So perhaps that's another motion I can put forward to expand.
If I could give you that advice, I probably would, because you've got a time frame saying as soon as practical. I think that's the other issues that you've raised are really important and we need to think about, but it's kind of like a bigger, broader conversation about how far do we go with FOGO. And it could take a lot more research in terms of the costs and the practicalities and all that, whereas this is... probably a simpler body of work if we want to get this starting sooner rather than later.
That's fine. Thanks, Mayor. I'll keep it to the simpler version and I'll leave that one for a conversation with staff and look at how we can progress the other areas, because I do see those as really important matters as well.
Yep, and thanks. I think timely also, given that we've got a new Director of Engineering Services at some stage in the near future. Thank you. Councillor Fox.
In having discussions with people around this, I don't know whether FOGO actually is included in green waste, whether they're combined with green waste or whether they're separate.
They're together.
They're together, aren't
yep.
they? So
yep.
why are we talking about FOGO rather than green waste?
Because it's food and organic... Food, organic, garden, organics.
And they go in the same bin. So you have to opt in for both FOGO, but you already have to have a green waste bin in order to opt in?
No, you get the green waste bin. That's what you get. The FOGO bin is delivered to you when you opt in.
So there isn't a separate container within that green waste bin for your food?
No. You then get a countertop bin that you then... put your food scraps in and then go and add it to the big green bin with the green lid. It all goes in together. But in my case, I don't have lawn at my place, so I don't have, you know, but I have plant cuttings and stuff like that, and the food waste goes in there as well.
Right, okay. That just clarifies it to me, and I have had other people wondering about this, so I'm just wondering if we should clarify that in the report.
Yep, sure. Yep, we can do that. Because it's still a relatively new concept for a lot of people. Councillor Richardson.
Thank you. So generally supportive of this idea. As I said in the workshop, I actually thought that it was opt out already. So I think generally it's a good idea. What I'd be interested in seeing in the report, though, would be some figures around what the current uptake is, what the likely participation would be, active participation. So the people who are actively doing it now have opted in. If we then deliver bins to the remainder of the residences around Kingborough, what is the likely uptake going to be? A bit of cost-benefit analysis around that uptake versus the amount that's going to landfill now. And then any information around back charges, if you like, or how contamination is dealt with. And we know that's a big issue with recycling. So if we find we have a large amount of contamination in these FOGOs, what the implications for us might be with that.
Yep. Thank you very much. They're all very relevant topics, and I've made a note of those, and we'll ensure that they're included in the report. Any further contributions? Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll speak briefly to lend my support to this idea and congratulate everybody involved for showing initiative on this one. It will significantly, I believe, boost participation. It's a very low-cost and high-impact option, and we've heard that throughout the time that we've been discussing this, both in the workshop and just in general. So I think, if my memory serves me, it's something like 92% of Kingborough's greenhouse gas emissions that are coming from this organisation are as a result of waste to landfill, and so by dealing with waste properly, we're actually making a significant impact when it comes to our mitigation efforts relating to our net zero targets. But more importantly, I think right now, currently it kind of relies on individual action, and so many people who probably would do it just either haven't gotten around to it or just didn't know that they were able to avail themselves of that service. So I think by switching, we'll actually just get a way higher uptake, and I think a whole lot of people who actually just genuinely really want to be involved currently aren't, so that will help. I also think it will align with our overall environmental goals in a much more clear way. And it will probably be more efficient as well. So I once again congratulate Councillor Midgley for moving it, and I look forward to reading that report.
Thank you very much. Any further contributions, Councillor Dean?
Only to say as well, supportive of it, looking forward to it. I know, as I think most of us that use it realise the benefits of it, and also it's particularly for what I guess is what we've talked about is the fact that most of its use can be often for garden waste and clippings, lawn clippings, for things that people perhaps don't really know. I mean, in our complex, people pay significant money for those trash packs, which is just green waste. So people are spending above and beyond what it would actually cost to get a FOGO bin, and would just be more efficient. So I think I'm supportive of the idea, but I am interested to see where we sit in terms of our numbers and how we kind of compare to other councils. So it's a good motion.
Thank you, Councillor Dean. Councillor Midgley, did you want to sum up?
Thanks, everybody, for your input. And, Councillor Fox, it is good to understand what the community is kind of feeding back to you, because I get that too. I've got, you know, friends who sign up and they're using green waste, and when I talk to them about the compost, they didn't know about that. And it's just that interesting thing, isn't it? We communicate around this, but it's like, we've got to just, you know, keep, yeah, just keep talking about it, how great it is, and I look forward to the report as well. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. I'll put the recommendation now, the motion now, moved by Councillor Midgley and seconded by Councillor Gladright. All those in favour? Against, motion is carried unanimously. Takes us to page 366. We've got a notice of motion headed Development Assessment Panels. It's been moved by Councillor Fox, and I'm looking for a seconder in Councillor Midgley. Councillor Fox.
Thank you, Mayor. This motion is as a result of attending the Blacklands Bay Progress Association meeting, and Councillor Midgley was attending as well. Three motions were carried unanimously at the meeting. Mainly, there's great concern about the proposed changes to planning appeal rights that are being proposed by the state government at the moment, and the fact that third-party appeal rights will be removed, and they have asked council to oppose the changes and to reject the removal of the third-party appeal rights, and also oppose the draft Land Use Planning and Approvals Amendment, or DAP, bill in 2025. And the background is on page 367 of the agenda. It's an issue that I think is the tip of the iceberg. There are other proposals that will come before the community to moderate or remove community input to decision making when it comes to planning, and the Blacklands Bay community is particularly concerned about this and would like to support for their opposition. So wait for other contributions and look forward to your support. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. Councillor Midgley.
Thank you, Mayor. Yes, it was a great turnout at the Blacklands Bay Hall a couple of weeks ago with a great group of people and some really great speakers about the revised DAPS legislation. And also understand that Taruna had a meeting as well. I didn't get to that one, but yes, I'm sure that was well attended as well. So I understand that the revised DAPS legislation is not significantly changed, and it was great to see that unanimously all councils across Tasmania with the previous DAPS legislation didn't agree and put in their recommendations and spoke against those documents. And so as we know that... Well, as some of us know, and as we've read, I guess, in the media, that the draft legislation basically empowers the planning ministers to remove assessment and appropriate developments from the normal local council process. Loud and clear at the Blacklands Bay meeting, people stood up for their democracy, for their local community, and for councils to have this process not go ahead. They didn't want fast-track processes being removed from elected councillors. They fast-tracked from, possibly destructive developments that are affecting communities, that there'll be no right for the community to appeal the final decisions to the planning tribunal. There was a range of speakers, lawyers from the Environmental Defender's Office, different planners, and all that, and they... just sort of said, we don't know who could be on the panel. They'll be having no powers to instruct councils to commence planning scheme changes, and a whole heap of information around that. And so this bill, that is, I guess, the first one, and I understand that council is putting in a submission, and we have had some briefing in regards to that, what that would be, and be able to have some input. It's not really changing in regards to our first submission that we put forward, and I'm really grateful to know that. But this is, I guess, in regards to point one, that Kingborough Council facilitates consultation to gather feedback. I understand that we won't be doing that for this current bill because of the time frame, and it's not coming to council, I guess, either for debate in regards to where, I guess, as councillors stand on this, again, due to the time frame. But what this motion looks to is the fact that there's going to be two other bills. So there's meant to be three bills, one that we put a submission in for already, and there's two other bills. And well, I'm just trying to see what they are. So one's to provide a fast-tracked approvals under the National Parks and Reserves Management Act, another bill that will remove limiting and appeal rights, and then there'll be another bill. So I guess that first point in the motion very much comes to gathering feedback from residents and ratepayers for the perhaps the future bills. We've heard, I guess, from the Blackmans Bay Association and perhaps Taruna as well, and members who attended that meeting in regards to where they stand. So these are the motions that kind of came out of that. And further on, I guess, in regards to then when the government does release these further bills, that it's about how we understand from residents and ratepayers in regards to their position on the proposed changes to planning appeal rights. So that's what I understand on that first point there.
Can I just provide some guidance on that? The way that the motion is currently worded, it actually is just in relation to the draft DAPS bill, which is currently open for consultation. So point one is asking us to gather feedback on that from residents, which we don't have the capacity to do because the feedback, the consultation period closes on the 24th of April. It's been open, that would have been open for 8 weeks. I think the government was initially planning 4 or 5 weeks and the Local Government Association was able to negotiate some additional time, but that closes in 2 weeks' time. So we don't have capacity to do point one of the motion, and as it stands at the moment, the motion is just in relation to the current bill. We can't really... I don't have any knowledge of those additional bills. We can't pass a motion here for draft bills that we haven't seen or not, you know, that have not been put out for consultation yet. So I'd just give some guidance to you on that, that point one is can't really be achieved. So I don't know whether the mover and seconder might like to reconsider point one of the motion or whether anybody would like to move any alternative motion or an amendment. Councillor Gladright.
Sure, I'd be happy to suggest that point one is changed to that council note the feedback provided by the BBCA.
Just clarify, that's probably the BBCA just sort of hosted the meeting, but it was a Blackmans Bay community, or representatives of the Blackmans Bay community or something.
Sure, the feedback that was provided to us on behalf of the BBCA.
Okay, so what about, what if the wording was, and don't let me put words in your mouth, but I can't move this from the chair, but what if the wording was that Kimberley Council notes the feedback, so it's basically just, changing the original, it says Kimberley Council facilitates consultation to gather feedback. It's just that Kimberley Council notes the feedback from, and then the rest of it stands as it is. Would that be, is that what you would like to move? Would that be acceptable to Councillor Fox as the mover and to Councillor Midgley as the seconder? Because that's...
Yes, I understand what you're saying. I think that would be acceptable. And I think otherwise we're boxing with shadows, and I think we should focus on this particular motion that as it in the heading, and I think you're right.
Okay, so acceptable to both of you? Yep. Okay, so that now becomes the amended substantive motion, or the substantive motion, I should say. Councillor Midgley, did you want to continue?
Thank you. So I guess in regards to when the other bills are released, that we can put a motion forward, that we have some consultation in regards to those as soon as we get...
That will very much depend on what the consultation period is. It's very difficult for us to do consultation. What I would urge people to do... feedback that members of the community give us, we can include... I think it would be very difficult in the timeframes that the government is providing for consultation on anything at the moment. It would be for us to go out as a council and do some engagement and then get it back and go through our processes and meet the sort of 6-week timeframes that are being provided. But what I would be doing is encouraging individuals to make submissions, because if they're going to make a submission to us, they might as well just make submissions directly to the government.
Yes.
And quite often they can be more powerful, because if the government gets
one from us that has views of, say, 50 people in it. It'd be better if they got 50 people to write directly to them so that they can see the strength in numbers.
Thank you, Mayor. And I guess through that as well, consultation engagement, they're big words. It can be about promoting that it is on through our social media channels or perhaps a paper or something, informing, because engagement and consultation, yeah, maybe more engagement's more the word. But
yeah, letting the community know that they can have their say.
Absolutely. So maybe that's the more appropriate word. So perhaps when that comes forward, we can ask a question at a council meeting. Can we let the community know that these are available for comment? And you're absolutely right that we need the numbers. All those 50 people who attended that meeting perhaps will be putting in a representation or a submission as well. But yes, it is an important one that we speak up and have our say. And I really thank the Blackmans Bay community for turning up and agreeing to this. We don't want these DAPs to happen, and hopefully the government listens. And I thank the council actually for pretty much being on side with a lot that was spoken about at that Blackmans Bay community meeting tonight. And thanks to staff for putting in a submission.
Thank you, Councillor Midgley. Councillor Street, did you have your light on, or did I imagine that as well? Am I seeing red lights tonight? That well, you better put your light on if you're going to speak.
Well, I did, but now I'm sort of confused about where we're at, so I'm just trying to work out where we're at before I...
So the motion, the reworded is there on the screen. So it reads, Kingborough Council notes the feedback from residents and ratepayers regarding their position. So that was the feedback that was heard at the meeting that some councillors attended.
Can I ask a question, please?
Of course.
Just because there's bound to be somebody here who knows this better than me. Is the third planning appeal rights changes actually in the draft land use planning and approvals amendment development assessment panels bill 2025? Because I'll flag, I don't think it is. So if somebody could...
I had the bill open a minute ago, hang on. Well, Ms. Shakuti, are you able to help us with that?
Sorry, can you ask that again?
Are the proposed changes to third-party planning appeal rights actually contained in the draft Land Use Planning and Approvals Amendment Development Assessment Panels Bill 2025?
The CEO would like to answer that.
You go.
through you, Mayor. So within the draft DAP legislation that was consulted on last time, there was no third-party appeal mechanism within that, and there remains no third-party appeal mechanism within the draft DAP legislation that is being proposed at the moment. So it's not a removal of it per se, it's a removal of...
It's the fact that it doesn't,
it doesn't exist
within the... Yep. Okay, yep. Right, all right, I understand. Look, I am going to speak to this, Mayor. I note the views that have arisen out of meetings that have been held in relation to this matter, particularly as facilitated by the Blackmans Bay Community Association. I have a differing view, but I certainly note the feedback that's been received. I don't believe that... a motion such as this is the appropriate forum for council to make a determination about rejecting any removal at all of third-party planning appeal rights or opposing the draft Land Use Planning and Approvals Amendment Development Assessment Panels Bill in any form other than what we have already determined as council previously. Simply don't think that it provides the right opportunity for consideration and advice, and I won't be supporting the motion.
So just to be clear, because of the timeframes that we have before us and that we're not... The submission... The government is seeking feedback by the 24th of April. We don't have a second meeting in April because we made the decision that because it was between Easter and Anzac that we wouldn't have that... the meeting that would fall the day after Easter Tuesday, whatever date that is. And so, but what we will be doing is there will be a
I guess, the essence of a draft that will be circulated amongst councillors for comment, which will form the basis of Kingborough Council's submission. Given that the bill has not really changed compared to the one that was presented last year, and you may recall that we put in a submission in November of last year, there has been very little change between that version of the bill and the current version, and that is, causing concern. And you may recall that the Local Government Association late last year voted on the matter, and for the first time that I can remember, and many other people who are in that room who have been on local government far longer than I have, it was a unanimous vote by all 29 councils in Tasmania to reject that original bill. And I suspect that given very little has changed, that the feeling is would not have shifted considerably. So there are significant concerns, but certainly there will be an opportunity for councillors to cite something before we put our submission in on the 24th of April. Councillor Dean, I had next.
Yeah, look, just to talk about our previous submission, in essence it was a while ago, but my kind of feeling that the sentiment behind that was that we picked apart some of the key issues, particularly in regards to its implementation of that bill. I can't remember us outright saying that we reject any removal and we oppose the entire thing. I felt like it was somewhat constructive in terms of what we came across. So I just feel like this... Can I just ask that as a question? Is that a somewhat a good synopsis of our submission last time?
Look, I think it is, because I think... I think that is... I think that the approach that we took last time was that it was so terrible, if we can offer some suggestions as to how to make it a bit more palatable, that the government might take up some of those suggestions, and I know that that's what other councils, how other councils approached it as well. It's pretty obvious now that, as we know, they didn't make it any better. They, in fact, made it a bit worse by playing around with the thresholds for the value of the projects that would go straight to DAPS. And that was really without anyone suggesting they do it. They just took it upon themselves to do that. So I think that I'd probably like to see us be a little bit more forthright in our views of how horrendous the DAPs are, rather than... I think we're past the point of being constructive, because it's pretty obvious that this is consultation for the sake of consultation. I don't want to be cynical, but I will tonight.
Well,
does that assist?
Yeah, look, then in my contribution, I understand what you're saying. I still think, and I spoke about this last time, I recall that, yes, there is a view that not all that workable, sure, but there are still parts of the bill, and the big one that sticks out to me is around social housing. And for two, to reject any removal of third-party planning will rights, I think there are examples where the DAPs are appropriate. And then to go to the third point, just to outright oppose it without having seen, having that opportunity for the submission to be sent to us again for feedback. I note... First point makes absolute sense, given PMAT mobilised with Taruna and Blackmans Bay, and that there are concerns in Residents Shore, but I couldn't support just outright rejecting the second point, and the third one just outright opposing the bill. I'd rather see us be still constructive and to still point out where there are areas, because that's at the end of the day what a submission should do. So in terms of this motion, I don't see why we should jump the gun. We have a submission that we can put in as a council, and this motion, I'm not 100% certain how it kind of feeds into that.
I think it's probably useful for drawing out some of the bit like on the previous motion that we've just debated. It's probably useful for drawing out some of the issues to base the draft submission on that then is circulated, given the time constraints we've got with Easter coming up and so on. So we, it will provide staff with some guidance.
And I can see Dr. Stevenson making copious notes as she will be writing it. No? Oh, no. Oh, oh that's it. Sorry. That's why Ms. Chikuti is writing copious notes. Councillor Cordova.
Thank you, Mayor. I'll be supporting it, and I just wanted to go on the record, I guess, to show my support for the community that has raised their voice about this. And I think it's something that's so important and something that's, in a way, so devious about the whole DAP process is that they said in the one of the declared objectives was to encourage public participation in the planning system, and then when a whole bunch of people come out and say, hey, we've got a whole bunch of concerns around this proposal, then they come back with a bill that looks basically the same, albeit a little bit worse. So I just think it's very unfair to the community. There's an enormous amount of community angst around this, and fundamentally it comes down to appeal rights are a major thing. When the community perceives that their neighbourhood is changing, they want the right to have their say, and that's a fundamental democratic value, and I don't think it's too much to ask, and I would really hope that the state government and everybody in the state parliament listens to the will of the community who are raising their voice so vociferously around this issue. The other things that I thought within the bill that have just kind of been moved around but they still remain is it's now in part 2, section 9.6, where it says the minister may refuse things for basically under this section for any reason is what it says. So these kind of completely ubiquitous carte blanche powers given to the minister I don't think are particularly democratic either. And I just think that the idea that it would save time, that was another kind of stated objective, it would save time and by they're creating a whole brand new set of really complex hoops to jump through. So the community has spoken loud and clear on this one to me, that's for sure, and so I'd be really pleased to see council take a strong view on it, and I think that the mayor's absolutely right in the assessment that we tried once being constructive and got essentially completely ignored. The community is still being really strong about this, that they're upset and they're concerned, and I think it would do us well to reflect that community sentiment to the state government in our submission. So I want to thank Councillor Fox for putting this forward, and I look forward to reading Council's submission. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Cordova. Any further contributions? Councillor Fox, would you like to sum up?
Just that an environmental lawyer said at the meeting and that a fundamental planning value is that the community is involved in decision-making when it comes to planning. And I think that's why the community is so upset. As well as the fact that this is an obvious erosion of democracy, and we shouldn't forget that, and we should be standing up for democracy. So I recommend the motion. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Fox. I'm going to put the motion. It's moved by Councillor Fox and seconded by Councillor Midgley. All those in favour? Against? Okay, show of hands is required. All those in favour? It's Councillors Fox, Cordova, Bain, Midgley, Gladewright and Reet. And those against is Councillors Dean, Richardson and Street. The motion is carried. We come now to page... This is getting our glasses back on. Page 368, confirmation of items to be dealt with in closed session, confirmation of minutes, applications for leave of absence, tender assessment AB2427, Davies Road reconstruction and Kingborough Waste Services Board appointment. I'm looking for a mover and a seconder, please. I've got a mover in Councillor Midgley and a seconder in Councillor Fox. All those in favour? Against? Motion is carried. That brings us to the end of the open session of Council. Thank you to those members of the community who have been with us this evening and to staff. In accordance with the Kingborough Council Meetings Audio Recordings Guidelines Policy, recording of the open session of the meeting will now cease. Open session of Council adjourned at 7:23 p.m. Let's wait for that to turn off.